All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here. RedIceMembers.com, RedIce.tv, the main websites. Thank you to everyone tuning in at RedIceMembers.com, of course, where we have every single show that we've done back to our start in 2006. Tons of material for you there to dig into and enjoy. We're doing this doing a stream today as well, actually, on DLive. You know, they have this thing, you get to kind of stream X amount of hours to, I guess, preserve your privileges on DLive. So thank you to everyone joining us there if you're tuning in live. So today we're doing an interview with Frode Midjord, who joins us, and he's also, of course, behind the Skanza Forum. We have a number of important news stories we got to cover, some recent just crazy news, which we can kind of both laugh at and cry at, I guess, at the same time. But lots to go through here, guys. So thank you again for joining us. And of course, Frode, great to have you back on the show again. How's everything going with you?
Hey, Henrik. It's always good to talk to you, and it's very, very good to be back here. I enjoyed the previous time I was on, and it's good to talk to your audience. I'm a huge fan of the work you guys are doing, and you know, you guys have been pioneering work in this field of, you know, creating alternative media and so on. That's very admirable.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Frode. And of course, you do great work with Skanza as well, and I want to kind of go into that a little bit later. Let's plug that plenty at the end of both segments here that we're doing today. And make sure people know where to go. But otherwise, beyond Skanza, anything you to newcomers, people who don't know you, anything you'd like to say to, in a way of introducing yourself? You've been part of like nationalist movements for, what is it, like 10, 15 years? How long is it now?
Well, yeah, since the late 90s, basically. So like 2 decades, I've been involved in one form or another, I guess, in nationalism in some form. I've been a public figure since 2017. So, you know, I've gone to events, I've read nationalist literature and participated more in the background, I guess. And since 2017, I've been more of a public figure, and I participate mostly in 3 projects. So I'm a semi-regular participant in Countercurrents Radio. That's on counter-currents.com, a weekly podcast radio show with Greg Johnson and John Morgan. And then I also have a YouTube channel and podcast called Guide to Culture. Culture is spelled K-U-L-C-H-U-R. It's the name is taken from a book by Ezra Pound. What we do is we dissect culture. We do movie reviews. We talk about films. We talk about literature. I've also done 2 special episodes about the Ukraine crisis, the war between Ukraine and Russia. The last episode I did together with John Morgan and Tom Rousel from Survive the Jive. They are both sort of regular guests on the show. And we talked about Swedish, well, Midsommar, an American horror film that's set
movie
in Sweden.
Yeah, I remember. Yes, I remember watching the trailer. It was just, wow, pretty decent stuff there, I must say. From was it Ari? What was the last name? The director again?
Ari Aster.
Aster.
Yeah, he did a movie called Hereditary. I think I haven't seen that.
I actually saw that one, and it was just the most psychotic, violent, disgusting things I've seen in a long time. Frankly, people are like praising it. It was the greatest. I just thought it was like way overdone on like this, like psychological violence, you know, on right top of just the gory, you know, people losing heads and stuff. But I guess a kind of indicative of like, yeah, the Ari Asters and the, what's the other guy? I always forget his name. Luckily, I forget his name. Inglourious Basterds. What's the director's name?
Tarantino?
No. Was that the director of it? I thought there was the other guy that stars in the film as well.
There's no, another young Jewish guy.
Did he do that one? Okay, I'm confusing him there. I know that he took part in the movie. He played a role in it. I forget what his name is. But anyway, go on.
Well, I mean, some people have seen it as very, very anti-European, anti-Nordic, anti our traditions. So, and yeah, they do set our traditions in a Nordic setting, or in a horror setting, in a negative portrayal in a way. But still, I have to say that I think that it was an interesting take. They did bring up some very sort of esoteric things about Nordic culture. They even had a little thing on the Uthark theory, which is a sort of very obscure, a Swedish runologist called Sigurd Agrell in the 1920s wrote about this sort of esoteric meaning of the runes and things like that. They had these little elements that brought a an extra sort of spice to the
movie. Oh, because they know, they study this stuff. They're interested in it. And I think on top of it, Fruity, I think that they're off, they got to offer something of essence, kind of like in the same way that you, when you give rat poison to rats, you 95% of it is like, you know, it's like oats or whatever the hell it is. And then the drop is, the one drop is the poison, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, that's my, I actually didn't see the whole thing.
So if your listeners are interested, they should watch that episode, because we do have a lot of good, interesting discussions. And Tom Rousel, yeah. He is a scholar on Indo-European traditions and has focused mostly on Nordic traditions, and he had a lot to say about the authenticity of some things. You know, they portray Ättestupan, which is a Scandinavian, yes, thing, sort of a legend, basically.
Eli Roth, chat, thank you. Eli Roth, that's the director I was thinking about. Anyway, go on, Frody.
All right, yeah. And they have blood eagling, to carve the blood eagle on a person as a sort of a sacrifice.
Yeah,
and they have lots of different interesting things. The whole thing is set in Horga, famous from Horgalåten. For everyone who is Swedish, will recognize that term and so on. It's an interesting film. I mean, so if you're interested, you should go watch that episode. We have an interesting discussion on that. That's my second thing. And then the third thing is the Skanza Forum. And for American listeners and viewers, you probably know American Renaissance, basically the AMREN. And this is a similar thing. I mean, a similar type of event. We have intellectuals from all over the world that we invite to give speeches. And we have an audience, and it's basically a social event and an intellectual event at the same time. So the main purpose is that we give people an opportunity to network with other high quality people. And we operate in Scandinavia, that is Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. And previously this year, we had an event in Stockholm, Sweden, about anarcho-tyranny. On the 12th of October, we're going to have an event in Copenhagen, Denmark, about national populism. And on the 2nd of November, we have an event in Oslo, Norway, about human biodiversity. And that is a very sort of academic-leaning event Well, we have Ed Dutton, who has a PhD in theology, but he's focused mostly on the anthropology of religion. So basically what it means from sort of evolutionarily adaptive point of view, religion, how it functions. We have Kevin MacDonald, of course. He is an emeritus professor of psychology from California. He has written extensively on Judaism as a group evolutionary strategy, but more recently, he has talked more about the psychological mechanisms that make us tick, basically, Europeans, Indo-Europeans, and so on, and he's going to talk more about that. He gave a speech in 2015 at a conference I organized together with Logik Förlag in Stockholm. He talked about the psychological mechanisms behind pathological altruism. Sort of, why are we prone to these behaviors and these weaknesses that make us so easily exploited by other people? So he's going to talk more about Europeans rather than Jews as a group. And then we have Helmut Nyborg, who is an emeritus professor of psychology in Denmark. He has researched extensively on heredity of intelligence and other psychological behavioral traits, you know, testosterone connected to aggression and violence and so on, difference between groups. And he's going to talk about nature versus nurture and bias in the academy. Basically, the academic world has been very biased in this question of what is heritable traits and what is just environment. What can we change? Because basically the assumption in the modern society is the blank slate, that everyone is exactly the same and we can just move people from one place to another and it doesn't make a difference because everyone is just the same. And then we have Greg Johnson, who has a PhD in philosophy, and he runs the Countercurrents, and he is the author of the White Nationalist Manifesto. He's going to talk about philosophical reasoning around ethnic interests, and that's going to be very interesting. And I'm also going to give a speech about this suggestion that race is a social construct. I'm going to talk about that from a philosophical perspective. That's going to be very good.
All right, awesome. Thank you for that little plug there. We'll give out some websites and stuff like that towards the end as well. Check out the event, of course. A lot of good speakers there. There was a couple of news items I want to dive into here with you, Frode, while we have you here, and just kind of talk about some of the recent madness and put some things in context. I'm sure you have some hot takes for us on some of the stuff that's going on as well. I was actually going to do a live stream last night and got a little bit too late, so I had a bunch of news that I was gathering to go through. But 8chan, of course, have been kind of in the center, really, of the last three shootings, at least there are accusations now flying around that somehow this kind of free speech image board is responsible, essentially, for being part in some of these shootings. So now they're actually the owner, Jim Watkins, who did a little video after the latest, I think it was the El Paso shooter, where he for once said that the manifesto had been uploaded to Instagram first, not to 8chan. And again, as soon as it was uploaded to 8chan, they removed it immediately. They contacted law enforcement. They've always cooperated with them. They are essentially on the same basis as any other social media, right? They're there. They're accessible. Whether people have live streamed murders on Facebook, and that actually happened, we'll get to that later, but the Philadelphia shooting, he actually live streamed to Facebook there as well, or be it Twitter or any of the, or YouTube, other platforms, they have not been roped into these things in the same way that an 8chan has, for example, right? It's this idea that he's responsible due to the fact that he has free speech on his platform that enables people to voice their opinions, which you essentially, in some cases, almost can't voice anywhere else. Definitely not on the internet. So anyway, Jim Watkins, he's going to be subpoenaed to testify before the House committee, and I'm sure it's going to be a total clown show, like most of these hearings are. And there's going to be no one to kind of represent like the other side and stuff like that. It's amazing how one-sided they are. We did one breakdown when, you know, we've checked quite a few of these House committees and stuff like that, and it's remarkable how few actually have their finger on the pulse and even knows what's going on. But what do you think? I don't even know if like how aware you are of 8chan and all that stuff, but it's clear to me that we're in a period right now where they're adamant about snuffing out the last few places of free speech we have left. And in addition, I should say 8chan had been down for some time as well when Cloudflare denied them service, just like they denied the Daily Stormer after. I think it was right in the wake of the Charlottesville rally. They basically like took them offline, and then they had issues with domain names and stuff. But thoughts on Jim Watkins and 8chan, probably?
Well, I don't really use 8chan, so I not directly on that. But I think that it's interesting that it's only in a very specific kind of, you know, shootings and murders and whatever, that they play this sort of political angle that the free speech is to blame. What about all the cases where, you know, mainstream mass media has pushed a sort of a narrative that is anti-white and that sort of incites hatred and violence against white people by non-whites? Are they ever held responsible for that? I mean, we had two mass shootings in a very short period of time, but only one got the treatment of being a sort of very played from a political angle, and that's what they always do. And it's always this double standard, and you know, they try their best, but I mean, I don't think really they can beat free speech in that way. Sure, they can try to silence people, but you know, that will only last a very limited period of time. But yeah, I do think they should rather go after mainstream mass media for sort of suggesting this anti-white narrative that white people are so evil and you know, deserve hatred from everyone else.
Yeah, no, that's right. And Frederick, he was his name, Brennan, he goes by Hot Wheels as well. He's one of the former owners of 8chan, and he spoke out recently about, you know, it was weird because he did like one, he talked with Ethan Ralph of the Killstream in the wake of that, and he was like much more, what's the wording, cordial, he was much more reasonable, I guess, there when he did the interview versus when he, but again, he could be misquotations by the media, we know that they lie all the time too, but New York Times did a piece on him, and it's like, oh, even this guy who was, you know, helping to set up or create 8chan, he said it should be removed from the internet and stuff, and they're trying to seek, you know, that as kind of validation and stuff. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with it. It's very sad that we're in the state that we are. But, you know, to follow up on some of this, we've seen mass, a kind of a changing environment, really, in terms of how people receive criticism, what you can say online and not. And one of these cases that also was kind of big on YouTube was the Vox's gay wonk, Carlos Maza. And that's his Twitter handle, by the way, before I get reported for hate speech. and it's decided that he's leaving. I don't know if I'm sure you followed the Steven Crowder thing, and it was back and forth, and YouTube has been in this position where essentially as soon as they get enough pressure put on them, they fold immediately and they kind of give up. But now it's, I guess, we'll see what it goes on to do. But luckily, I guess, to a certain extent, not even liberal Vox, not even the the insanely liberal Vox can hang on to someone like Carlos Maza anymore. And so they're letting him go. What do you make of it, Frody?
Well, I haven't really followed this case. I'm not really familiar with it, so I'm sorry that I can't really say too much intelligence about it, I guess.
Oh, that's fine. It's the YouTube environment, I think, as you well aware know, because you're on there, has dramatically changed in the last 2 years, and now they're coming out with a new policy which they call harassment, creator harassment, which essentially is, just point the other day when we put up a video about Chris Cuomo, he was freaking out at a guy. I don't know if you saw that clip. And essentially, due to the fact that he has a YouTube channel, if someone uploads a clip where they criticize Chris Cuomo, YouTube could essentially say, well, that's creator on creator harassment. And so we're going to remove this. In other words, anything that makes anyone anywhere for whatever reason, even if they're official people in politics, even if there's media pundits or whatever in big positions where they have power and influence, we won't be able to be in a position where we can question them and expose them, essentially, when some of these things come out. So YouTube, I feel that that's a dying platform. And the Carlos Maza, Steven Crowder debacle, which, again, Vox was very responsible of kind of pushing, they have helped to ruin this platform. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the appeal of the whole thing, that it's a place where everyone can participate in the debate. And if that's not possible anymore, well, then what's the point? Then you can just have like unboxing videos and you know, very trivial things. And then we have to find another platform where we can actually debate serious things and, you know, talk about real things and politics and so on, because people will disagree with each other. That's the point of talking about serious things, is that people will disagree with each other. And if they're not allowed to disagree because someone, someone's feelings are hurt by everyone not agreeing with them, well, then we have to do it somewhere else. So I think, yeah, it's a bit of a suicide for the platform if they go along those lines. But at the same time, I mean, this is a sort of a monopoly right now, and it's difficult for any sort of competition to get a voice out there, I think.
Yeah, definitely. There was one video I wanted to play as well, kind of indicative of where we are right now in terms of the, really, just the, to use the simplest term and terminology we can, cultural Marxism. Mark Dice retweeted it, another LGBT account promoting pedophilia. They're celebrating a 16-year-old dating a 49-year-old man. And Dice says, do the math, when he says that they've been together for 6 years, right? So it was revealed that he was underaged by the time that they met. The guy now is 55 and the kid is 22, I believe. And I was this close to downloading it, and they damn well took it down. Because it was getting too much flack. And I think it was also because of the fact that it was promoting something illegal. I've searched for it. Pink News, man 55, boy 22. Nothing comes up in videos anymore. Even the page they created on Pink News, .co.uk, gives a 404 right now. So, they push the boundary forward. Yeah, every time there's always something that they do, right? And then they can take a step back, or even by scrubbing it off the internet like this, they can't even deny that they did it. No, we didn't do anything like this. And it's always like, love wins. Age is irrelevant. It doesn't matter, you know. So they always have to push the boundaries. And that's the only thing that they have, is to continuously radicalize and something new to kind of cling on to and try to break down barriers. And I always argued, it feels like these new victim groups that in some cases are literally just like invented as a new category of a victim group, is used as a sledgehammer against normal culture. They can't have rights if that's not predicated on some kind of structure in the normal world is broken down or opens up their gates for these, you know, people or furries or, you know, whatever the hell it is. What do you make of it, Frody?
Yeah, I mean, there's this old saying that the revolution devours itself. And when you start just questioning all norms and all standards, there's no end, basically. So what was, you know, what the the previous generation of revolutionaries fought for and what they thought was very good to sort of question all the norms then. Well, now they are the new norm, and they are hated by their sort of the later generations and so on. And I remember particularly just as an illustration of how quickly things go down, there was a case in Sweden a couple of years ago where they hand out the Lenin Prize nice. For people who have done things, you know, to promote the sort of Cultural Revolution
and mass murder.
And
100 million dead. Yeah,
exactly. And they wanted to give this Lenin Prize to some sort of feminist rapper from Norrland, sort of, I think she's Sami, but she didn't want to accept a prize from these old, you know, old men. I don't want really? That prize from me. And this is just how silly it is, you know. It's God. There's no bottom in this thing. If you just start, if the whole point is, you know, questioning everything, questioning all norms and breaking down all norms and principles, well, there's no bottom. Of course, you're gonna get, you know, pedophilia and you know, sex with animals and sex with corpses.
You have to, right? Because I mean, it's predicated on continuously moving the needle in one direction. And as I said, if it's used, and I don't think many people inside of these groups, identity groups, and I mean, it's like, you know, I'm not against obviously like identity politics, but in most cases, this is like drilling down into something so minute as opposed to like a bigger identifying factor. It's like, as I said, furries or people who like, you know, weird toys and they get off sexually on that, or women that marry their chandelier, or, you know, there's like all these weird categories right now. And so I'm against, obviously. But again, it's always predicated on the fact that it need to be used against like the norm culture. And say, no, it's because of you that this is bad, or they're being held back and stuff. So we have to break down, you know, well, let's be honest, it's the Western world largely that's the target. It's like, you need to be broken down. You need to be, you know, opening up to all these things and let your kids be educated about this and hopefully be indoctrinated by all this propaganda out there that's flying around about it. You know, it's sickening.
Yeah, if we don't have any norms and people continuously just want to be more and more edgy, and we have no way of holding any standards, because we can't talk about, okay, what behavior is adaptive for a group? What is conductive for, you know, long-term interests for our group or anything? If everything is just, you know, short-term, what's fun right now, then I guess people can just make a case for whatever, you know, and if that's the whole... The problem with the West and the world today is that we have a faulty framework of values. Basically, everything is based on that we should pity one group or another, and we should feel sorry for this group with a certain perversion, why they can't do whatever they want or whatever. But we don't have any positive values. We don't have any positive values of, you know, heroism or anything like that, because everything is just sillified in a way. So if we don't have any positive values, if we just have these negative values of, you know, pity and whatever, then society just falls apart. We don't have any way of determining what kind of norms we want to have in our society, because right. we just reject out of hand all frameworks of value.
Yeah, that's right. And I think too that there is an end game to this too. I think, you know, you got to break down the most fundamental principles first in order to get people to accept everything. If they can give up on not only their nation and their people, but even their basic biology, what is left essentially, right? I mean, I think at the end of that that tunnel is essentially the transhumanist movement. You know, now it's transgender right now, but it's about transcending sexuality. And of course, gender is a kind of a, you know, misnomer. They use that invented term as a way to say that you know, they attempt to link it with the sexual organs, which they really can't, but they're trying to do. It's a dishonest kind of argumentation, really. But again, most people don't see that kind of that, how they're hoodwinking that. But again, eventually that will lead to maybe kids taking, you know, puberty suppressants. They go on hormones. They have to be on hormones for the rest of their lives. Which makes them essentially beholden to big pharma. They have to pay huge amounts of money each year to get these synthetic hormones and keep taking them to, you know, kind of prevent the natural state of the body to bloom. But I think, you know, weaved into all of that is a beneficial agenda by breaking down culture, by breaking down nationality, by breaking down roots, belonging, ethnicity, and demonize, obviously, is a part of that too. You basically have people where they're so desperate to find something which they belong to. And when the young kids, all they see out there being celebrated, essentially, on the streets, is like, you know, the pride movement, and you have to be trans, and you get TV shows if you, you know, it's like a, it's a reward system within all these new categories of victim groups that they set up, which is the incentivizer for young people to be attracted to those, essentially, and especially when there's so, when there's nothing left in so-called normal, you know, well, so-called, it is the normal culture, what has been the norm for thousands of years in many regards, you know, with the core family that being in place, with belonging to a tribe or to a group or, you know, to a nation more recently, but founded on the same principles. So, you know, it's like we're at the abyss in terms of how we're going to move forward with our teenagers and our kids, because it's like, what is it left for? That's what we come in up. It's our job to make sure to tell them that there is another option out there. You don't have to, like, cut off your genitals and take hormones for the rest of your life to feel that you're appreciated and fit in. But it's a you know, we can laugh at it, but it's a dramatic, shocking, radical point of view that has inserted itself into our lives, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is in a way we're on a Spenglerian sort of, you know, Spengler had this theory about sort of this circular function of civilization or whatever, that you start out hungry, you want to build something, and that, you know, puts you in a certain framework or whatever. You're creative, you're hungry, you build something up, and then you become lazy, and other people are hungry and take over your civilization. I think basically we have too much leisure. We have our lives are too easy. In a sort of pre-modern society, when people had to, even, you know, pre-modern, that's saying too much, actually. Just go back a few generations where you know, it was far more difficult in the early 1900s, everywhere in Sweden and Norway, all over, people were, you know, on the verge of starving in many circumstances. And you can't really indulge in this kind of weird, stupid behavior. I think that if
it's a
luxury behavior, and I think it's boredom. Yeah. I mean, sure, maybe some people are, maybe people are born homosexual, maybe some people are born with a hormonal defect or whatever that predisposes them to be homosexual, but no one is born a brony or a furry or whatever. That is like a function of boredom. You don't know what to do with your spare time, and you have no real mission in life. So, well, you try to be special some other way, maybe. I don't know. But this is so, you know. And the question I'm asking is it possible to go on in this modern luxury world and get normal behavior out of people?
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible without the external pressure from a harsh society to keep people in an adaptive behavior? Is it possible to have a normal society in that way? Or will cities inevitably just destroy people by draining them from all natural behavior and just, you know, everything just it starts revolving around, you know, you have to create an identity, you have to do all kinds of weird things to sort of amuse yourself out of boredom, I guess.
Yeah, they've created a blank. They are creating a blank slate, but they want individuals to be that as well, and that you can just kind of insert whatever you want. It's like a different presets out there that you can, skins or whatever, the comparison you want to do, and you can take one or this or that, or you could change this anytime, you know, stuff like that. And now it's down to the level. I mean, again, think about that. It's down to the level now where you surgically intervene with your biology to change those things. I mean, that said, there's nothing in nature that has ever had that opportunity. It's a temporary, brief period in time that I think that, I mean, I know that they tried some of that in like Weimar or Germany or something like that, right? So sure, there's a couple of cases before, but look at how that turned out now. But you know what I mean? It's like, these are weird, just anomalies, I think, in the scope of things. And I think you're right. The more that this continues, the further this insanity is let go without any kind of checks and just reason coming into the picture. I think it's a self-destructive system, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think. I mean, there's no way we can reach the bottom. I remember I was in a library in Sweden, and basically they in libraries they always have this section. I walked past this section with children's literature and so on, and they have a poster on the wall, I guess for small children to learn how to read. And I just caught a glimpse of that, and I said, okay, what is this? You know, you have like A for ape, B for bil, car in Swedish, and so on, and N was for nudist, and Q was for queer, and that's in a library in Sweden. Just, you know, that's
Nice.
what those people think are the essential things for little children to relate to certain letters when they learn to read and so on. And it's just a sillification of society. It's just, everything just becomes silly and a silly game. And you know, when people say you should call me by this or that pronoun, that's just a silly way of for them trying to be special in some way, and it's, you know, there's no end. It's like an autistic mind game, you know. I can make up these rules, and you have to play by them. You know,
Yeah,
everything
exactly.
just becomes a
Essentially,
game.
yeah. Well, exactly. What is it based on? Whatever we feel like, nothing. Whatever someone could come, whatever mad mind could come up with something. That's the, you know. But again, it's of that part. There's no boundaries. There's no rules. There's no structure. There's no nothing. I mean, obviously, this very nihilistic kind of view, relativistic view. It's like there's nothing there. It's just morality doesn't really exist. It's just inserted. It's very weird. But check this story out. Just again, just as a glimpse into where this is going. And again, now we're talking about the basic foundations of how we sustain ourselves and feed ourselves. New York University promotes a study comparing cow insemination to rape and milking cows to sexual assault. A journal published by New York University Gender Studies Department recently put out a paper meant to call attention to the sexual exploitation of dairy cow. Who would even think that has anything to do with sex? I mean, come on. The author argues that in order to be a true advocate for feminism, one must consider the commodification of a dairy cow's reproductive rights. And again, it's part of that transhumanist thing that you just watch, just wait. As soon as you're going to get like robots that are going to be slightly kind of autonomous, and as humans, you might have the impression that they're like, you know, are somewhat independent. You're going to see calls for like robot rights, right? This is the next level of the civil rights. And again, it's going to be used as a sledgehammer against normal culture. But yeah, this is reading a little bit more here. Titled Readying the Rape Rack: Feminism and the Exploitation of Non-Human Reproductive Systems. The paper was published Friday in a journal called Dissenting Voices. Yeah, I'm sure they're dissenting on a lot of other issues too, which is published and edited by the Women's and Gender Studies program at the College of Brockport State University of New York. The published piece aims at discussing the sexual exploitation of non-human bodies, specifically dairy cows. The author notes that as a vegan and animal rights activist, she feels compelled to reveal the feminist aspect of animal agriculture, a topic she says is unfortunately under-researched. Well, I'm sure money's just going to flood into this area right now. But it's nonetheless important because the same way women's health have been at stake for years, a dairy cow's reproductive system has been poked and prodded. So although I agree, obviously, on like animal rights, and that doesn't mean I am for in any way some kind of abuse of animals. But come on, it's like animals have a huge part in humans' ability to survive, you know, especially, of course, even Indo-Europeans, of course, which started with domesticating the cow. We have a longer link, I guess, to dairy products. That's why we have the most lactose tolerant, you know, things like this. It's like tied to kind of an Indo-European story to a certain extent. And I just feel it's more, I don't know if it's conscious by these women or not, but it feels like it's an attack because there is a link to something which is fundamental within the principles of how human and specifically Europeans have built and being able to sustain themselves, their life. What do you think?
Didn't they have some schools where they didn't want milk served because not everyone can drink milk? It's like a European
I don't
thing.
doubt, of course. Yeah, it's a white
Because
supremacy, right? That's the milk thing, yeah.
it is because not all races can digest milk the same way and so on. Again, I mean, it's just the same thing over and over again. If we don't have a sort of a Faustian culture where we strive upwards and we put our mental energies into something constructive, I think, you know, people will use their brain somehow, and then they'll just start attacking themselves or whatever, you know, just using them for stupid stuff. And clever silly is a term that has been used, you know, for just using intellectual work for nothing, basically. It's just empty stuff, you know, and that's what it is. And therefore, we have to have some sort of grand project that we're engaged in and put our energies to something more useful, I think.
Yeah, definitely. According to the publication, the dairy industry is a host for sex-based discrimination and a site where sexual assault and objectification based on biological makeup are highly preventable but ignored, as we choose to neglect non-humans with whom we share a planet. I mean, again, animal husbandry within, you know, the Europeans, at least, that I've looked into have been very well. There's very, very rare cases where there's, like, you know, obvious abuse of animals and stuff like that. And when it does come out, it's good that it comes out and it's good that it's exposed. But in most cases, it's these mega plants where they have like thousands of cows that go through every day. And I think that some of these people working in that, literally standing with a chainsaw and like cutting through animals all day, when it's on that mass production scale, it like gets a screw loose eventually. And the only thing they can cope with it is to, like, I mean, it's a kind of a classic, right, a coping mechanism. You hurt those, you know, you hurt things to disassociate yourself from it emotionally, right? So again, I'm for like small farms, local farms, do it organic, be kind and all that kind of stuff. But this is just insanity.
I would guess that the person who's written this has not really worked on a normal farm.
No, exactly. Right, right. That's obviously. And again, it's classic, right? Many of these feminists, they don't even know how, you know, they don't know how the bridge is built, but they're happy to go over it. You know what I mean? It's like, but if for some reason the bridge is considered to be racist or misogynistic, they'll be the first to blow it up, you know? Mm-hmm. All right, this one's kind of interesting. Steve King questions if there would be any population left if not for rape and incest. Very interesting how the media ran with this. I want to get your take on this too. I thought we could listen to this clip, but immediately it was like, oh, see, GOP conservative guy. And of course, we know his kind of the accusations of white supremacy to Steve King, because previously he said things like, oh, well, you can't sustain Western civilization with someone else's children and things like this. Kind of just common sense, sensible stuff. Like, if you, I can't remember if he said that or not, but like essentially saying, you know, if you import a third world population into a first world country, you're not going to, you know, it's not going to retain the same kind of level of it. So essentially, there was a roundabout way he was arguing here. Here's the clip from the Des Moines Register. Let's listen to that and see what he actually said. Let's see here. Let me turn up the audio here a little bit. Boom. There we go. There it is. Okay, let's check this out.
Hold the ground on principle. Maybe we could have gotten that to the floor if I compromised. It wasn't going to move through the Senate anyway, but we still stand on these principles alive. And since then, I started to think, we know the reasons why we don't accept exceptions, for the most of us, for rape and incest, because it's not the baby's fault. But there's another thing. I started to wonder about this. What if it was okay, and what if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled those people out that were products of rape and incest? Would there be any population of the world left if we did that, considering all the wars and all the rape and pillage that's taken place and whatever happened in culture after society? I know I can't certify that they're not part of a product of that, and I'd like to think every one of the lives of us are as precious as any other life, and that's our measure. Human life cannot be measured. It is the measure itself against which all things are weighed.
Now, that's actually just factually correct, though. If yeah, I think so anyway. I mean, and it's obviously not.
Is this about abortion?
Yeah, exactly. It is in a roundabout way. It's his way of justifying of saying we shouldn't have abortion because, look, if they had that in the past, and if you could take out all those people that were a product of, you know, raping through conquest and stuff like that, we would. He questions, would we even be in here? There would be such a decline in population. But if, again, factually, the reply to this is just emotional and saying, see, he's trying to say that rape is okay. Like, no, he's not saying that. He's just saying that, like, if we considered that those were issues where we would have taken away, or they would have been aborted, all of this, if we had the ability, would there even be any people? Because, I mean, that's a constant throughout history. I even think some of the, I mean, I'm not saying that animals rape, but I don't think there's many things where it's consensual. We don't even know how it looked in the early day of human development. We don't even know if it was like it was the caveman with the club over the head and he did the deed and that's how you had new reproduction. That's the point, right?
It's real. They probably didn't have, you know, consent forms that you had to sign.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You know, yeah, it was violent. It was brutal in some cases, but that's
of course
that's what it was, right?
Of course. I mean, violence is a part of violence and coercion and whatever is a part of human nature. That's how it is. And of course, I don't think, yeah, I think that probably, you know, human populations were small back in the day.
Very small, yeah.
You know, they have increased immensely over the last just a few couple of hundred years. So, yeah, you had smaller communities and some form of incest or some form of rape or whatever. If you go back far enough in our, you know, our lineage, I bet something like that happens in basically everyone. And you know, because we have thousands of ancestors, essentially, if you go back several generations.
Yeah, and I'm sure exactly. And the point is, you know, if that ability was removed, we might not be here today, essentially, right? So
yeah,
it doesn't mean it's like good, but it's, see, look at the analysis of the situation and how they overreacted to use it as a conscious smear that the guy is out of his mind. CNN writes, regarding an interview they did with the guy about this, another GOP candidate, "These remarks are just so outlandish. They're out of bounds, out of control. I mean, you have to wonder if he's out of his mind." Former Representative Charlie Dent reacts to Steve King's questioning if there would be any population left if not for rape and incest. It's a, they can't factually deal with a claim and look at it for what it is. It always have to be politicized and used again as a hammer against those who they don't like, who bring a different view, like Steve King. That's how I see this, anyway.
Yeah, I see it as a very simple argument that he doesn't like abortion, and people say that, well, what if incest is the case, or what if the woman is raped? And he says, well, if everyone had allowed abortion in case of rape throughout history, you wouldn't be here. That's essentially his argument.
Yeah,
as far as I can tell.
Yep.
And I think this is just a silly. It's a typical leftist twist on things. You know? They can never give any sort of serious arguments or take anything seriously. They just have to, you know, be emotionally silly about everything.
But it shows how underhanded they are in their tactics. That it's always about just flinging as much shit and mud and dirt at somebody as possible and using it in the most disingenuous way. And either consciously or just because they're ignorant, take it out of context and say that it means something which it didn't actually mean. I think they might not actually understand that, because we're actually talking about people that don't take those things into account. I don't think they have that grand scope of like what did it take for humans to be where the point they're at, right? I don't think they think in those terms. I think they think whatever is here now, that's what we have to work with, and it's just social change, everything. It's not. What I'm saying is it's evident that there is no appreciation for our past, be those hardships, injustices, struggle, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that you hung on by you know, the nails to survive in some cases. And they don't have that in their equation. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, this is a parasitical ideology, because if people didn't go through hardships and, you know, if people weren't violent in the past or whatever, leftists and pacifists and whatever wouldn't have this comfortable society, because they would have been exterminated or they would have been someone else's slaves. So this is a parasitic ideology. It isn't based on anything in the real world. It's just, you know, the weak self-righteousness of these disgusting people. I can't really respect people like that.
It's amazing. Amazing times. Let's talk about the Philadelphia shooting then. Here's the suspect being led away. What was his name again? Mark something, I think. So it was a black guy. And we've actually seen less media uproar around this than we have had previous shootings. It was, in this case, it's 6 police officers that were shot. Now, no one died, but that's irrelevant. It's still a mass shooting. It means it's one person shooting at a number. I think over 4 is the technical term for a mass shooting. So it is a mass shooting. And now it's a mass shooting which was directed at law enforcement. But you see how it, almost instantly the interest for it is not entirely. I don't want to be that dishonest, but it's not as hyped up. as it was when these other shootings in El Paso occurred and everything else. And again, I haven't looked into it too much. I know that there was a police officer that was there to serve a, was it a drug warrant or something like that? A warrant regarding something about a drug charge or something like that. And he took up a gun and started shooting them. And he was a criminal. He had a record. He had done these things before. And, you know, I think someone said, well, why was he even on the streets? This guy's obviously a criminal. But it also made the gun argument collapse, that it's like he was a criminal. He was convicted. He was not allowed to have guns. And yet here he is with his guns, right? It means that if you put red flag laws in place, if you put these restrictions in place for normal people to get weapons, they already have background checks, as I said. That's why he couldn't get a weapon. The criminal will always get his hand on a gun anyway. And essentially the scenario that they want to create is so that individuals, at least in America, we don't have this luxury in Europe. We don't have a Second Amendment in Europe, unfortunately. But at least in America, they have that ability. Like if someone approaches you or your family or wherever you are, if you are armed and if you're trained and if you know how to use that, you can defend yourself against a mass shooter. And we might end up in a situation, this has happened in the past, where someone is knowledgeable, is there, and they shoot the guy only when three people have died so far or something. But if that guy wasn't there with his gun, who knew what he was doing, it might have turned into 20 people dead, 30 people dead. Or, you know, like in Norway with Breivik, 77 people, because there was no one there that had any means or way to defend themselves. So they always fall on their own sword, I feel, on these gun control issues. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean it's also not only number crunching. It's like, are you treated as a responsible adult or not? And I think that is one benefit in America compared to Sweden and like the nanny state thing. People just have this huge confidence in the state taking care of everything for them, and that has just made them so passive, and they see themselves as children, basically. They don't see themselves as responsible for anything. And I think that symbolic value alone makes it very interesting with, American type gun laws, which should be, imported to Europe, I think. I think Europeans have a lot to learn there, because just this passive mentality that you see yourself as just the sort of underling in a state instead of
call the cops. I mean, as we have gang wars essentially in Sweden now, hand grenades going off. I've seen I guess for simplicity's sake, liberal talking points where they have, I've seen the tweets. It's like it's a flag from, a country, and then there's a number after it which shows how many mass shootings they've had, and it says zero, right? Then they go down the list all the way down to America, and it's like 0000, and then it's like one maybe in one country somewhere, like Brazil or Mexico or something. And then it's like 256 in America kind of thing, but it's like, well, that's because it's not because they can't get weapons there. In France, for example, there were mass shootings because it was Islamic terrorists that got hold of them. But if you, but the dishonesty comes in if you included the other ways that people get weaponry and attain something to hurt other people with. If you would have included hand grenades or knives or acid or, all these other things, they would be full of that there's violent crime taking place in all these other countries. So it doesn't hold up, you know what I mean?
No, and Sweden has shootings every day.
We do, that's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, shootings and hand grenades. There was some study published in the beginning of this year. I think it was over the last, I don't remember how many years, 5, 6, 7 years, it was like 116 hand grenade attacks or something like that. Yeah. Something.
But you don't
insane.
See that included, in all these lists when they rank it.
Yeah, in a country in peace. But the thing is that that means a country not at war. But in the interesting thing is that now we import massive amounts of violent people areas that are affected by war, and we have just been pacified for decades, if not centuries by now in many parts.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's like we're just lambs to the slaughter. We should need some sort of potential for defending ourselves.
Yeah, that's right. So there was a shootout with the cops. It was, I don't know how many hours. It went all night into the morning, I think, morning hours. But yeah, there you go. So we'll see. You're not going to see the same airplay on this, despite the fact that it's like, police getting shot. It's a very anti-police kind of environment overall in the mainstream media as well. They're the guilty party. They're the representatives of white supremacy and all these kinds of lies. I think it took place in a place called, was it Nice Hill or something as well, which is kind of funny. But yeah, so anyway, I wanted to go to one more story here. And then we can take a little break, guys. The stream will just continue, and we'll continue in part two after that as well. I want to plug, give us on the website for your stuff as well. But check this one out too, just to indicate that Trump has not actually been there to back people up. I know he's been very pro Second Amendment and stuff, but Trump has failed on so many issues, and the media continues to kind of point this cartoonish shadow version out of what they think he is and what they think he's doing. So there was a report here out of Breitbart that Ivanka Trump is actually calling now different congressional members regarding gun control. So she's like taking initiatives together with her dad. She seems like in many cases she can just say to her dad, like, "Daddy, can you do this or do that or something like that?" And he reacts to that. Same thing as he reacts to Kushner, his son-in-law, who's married with Ivanka. But so Ivanka Trump is reportedly calling members of Congress to feel out various gun control proposals and to figure out what needs to be done in order to get them passed. They were talking about these red flag laws, which essentially is a neighbor, a family member, someone can come along and just say, we have worries about this individual, and so therefore they shouldn't have a gun or something, right? And then the government would essentially act on that. I don't even know if there's any other measures of tests or checks before it's decided then that someone is to take them away. But can you imagine how that would be abused and misused by people who are distrustful or that don't like their politics or, you know, for whatever reason? It would be just a mess, I think, of people calling and snitching on each other, essentially.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. People are probably not going to be honest on those things. I haven't followed this very closely since I don't live in America, so I'm not, you know, the specifics of these things I'm not really up to date about. But I heard that that Trump is sort of taking and he's sort of backing down on these things.
That's
a very unwise thing to do, to sort of. Because the whole appeal of Trump is that he's not backing down and you know, taking the abuse from the bullies and the mass media and whatever, that he's basically telling them to you know, fuck off.
Yeah.
And that's what was his appeal to begin with, and he should continue that attitude.
That's absolutely right. All right, guys, I want to continue. We have a lot of other stories to talk about too. In the second part, I'm enjoying the conversation here with Frudi Midyud, in case you're just joining us live, or again, thank you for tuning in at redicemembers.com. Red Ice TV. You might be watching on YouTube later or BitChute or something like that. Again, guys, wherever you're tuning in, thank you for being here. It's great to have you with us. Let's talk about some of the places where people can go to pick up tickets and stuff like that to the Skanza Forum, and give us the dates on these. Once again, there's one in Oslo and then one in Copenhagen.
Exactly. So I have two conferences coming up. One is in, this picture is from Oslo, so that's on 2nd of November. We're going to talk about human biodiversity, basically the nature-nurture sort of divide, the fact that there is a biological heritable foundation for human behavior and differences between both individuals and groups of people. The speakers are Greg Johnson, Edward Dutton, Kevin MacDonald, Helmut Nyborg, and myself. And you register by sending me an email to info@skanzaforum.com. So there are links probably provided in the show notes for this episode. I have announcement with all the information on Countercurrents. So both these events are announced at counter-currents.com. And you send me an email to info@skanzaforum.com, and you tell me which event you want to go to, and then you provide me with some information for vetting, because we have a vetting procedure just to keep you safe and to keep the integrity of the event safe and the speakers and the other participants. So I have two events, one in Oslo, that's on the 2nd of November, and before that, on the 12th of October, we have a conference in Copenhagen, Denmark. 12th of October, we're going to talk about national populism, and the speakers there are Rasmus Paludan. He's a huge name.
Interesting guy. Yeah, it's a new. I want to talk about him more in the second part, actually.
Yes, let's do that.
Yeah.
He's a very good. He's a very interesting guy. He has a huge YouTube channel. So, you know, in comparison with the population in Denmark, he has so many views, and he's a huge name there. We have Greg Johnson. He speaks at all of our events. We have Mark Collett, who also has a very large and very popular YouTube channel. He spoke in Stockholm earlier this year as well. He's a very good speaker. We have Millennial Woes, who is also probably known to many of your listeners and viewers.
Yeah.
And he is speaking at the Skanza Forum for the fourth time. And myself, I'm also speaking, of course. So these two events are announced. Both of them are on counter-currents.com and on the Occidental Observer. So send me an email if you want to come and join us there, and we'll take it from there.
Right. You have the email right there at the bottom of the screen. If you're watching the video version of this, info@skanzaforum.com. Send Frody and the guys over there an email, let them know you're interested in going, and then sort out the rest with them. Guys, we're going to take a little quick break here. We're going to just continue the stream for those of you who do watch it live right now on DLive. But of course, want to implore, is that the word? Everyone out there watching, to head on over to redicemembers.com, get a membership with us, help us out. That's the best way to support us. You get access to just tons and tons of stuff, hours and hours and hours of video and audio. There is an audio radio version, podcast, whatever you prefer, of the shows available to. Most of the second hours that we do of these interview shows are available exclusively on the member section. And then, of course, you can get the first hours always on our YouTube channel, BitChute or RedIce.tv. And then we have other exclusive material for you on the member section as well. We do streams sometimes that only go up there afterwards. We do have videos that we do just for members, and of course we have the Weekend Warrior show, which is an exclusive kind of news roundup show that we do on usually we do the prep on Saturdays and the recording on the Sundays, and so it usually goes up on the weekends on Sundays. So definitely check that out. Some great stuff there for you guys to dig into. But Frody, stay with us here, then we'll continue with the stream, and then for the rest of you guys not tuning in live, we'll take a brief little break, and we'll be back after that. So Frody, stay tuned, and we'll ring you out with some plugs here. We'll be back. Stay tuned.